Welcome to the Disability Sport Info Show, the podcast that explores academic knowledge about disability sport. My name is Dr. Chris Brown, and I'm an academic with an expertise in disability sport. Each episode, I focus on a specific topic of disability sport and speak to academic experts to understand the area in more depth. So join me and listen to the Disability Sport Info Show to get an expert view on disability sport. Hello, listener. Welcome to the show. Today we have Professor Simon Darcy, who is going to be talking about the enablers and barriers that people with disabilities may face when trying to access sport and physical activity. I caught up with Simon to discuss the enablers and barriers in more detail and to get his expert view on these issues.
What would you say are the main enablers and barriers to sports participation for people with disabilities?
Thanks very much, Christopher. And first and foremost, I must also say that I'm an insider to the process. So I had a spinal cord injury in a surf-related accident and realised it was a pivotal moment in my life for a lot of reasons. So in speaking to you today, I will talk some aspects on the personal, but certainly from the perspective of understanding the lived experience within the research and academic space is incredibly important. So one of the first things I'd say to the people that are listening to this are to work with people with disabilities. Don't think of them as subjects in your research. So the first starting point is think about working with people with disability, not carrying out your research on them. And also understanding that there are key variables, and those two key variables are what type of disability, and I think broadly from the perspective of access needs. Try not to use physical disability. Think more about people that have got some form of mobility disability. And then the other major types in that space are across hearing or deaf capital D community. If people identify as being deaf capital D, they see themselves as part of a different cultural group. They don't necessarily see themselves as having a disability. And there are different types of sign language. They do vary by continent. Then there's people who are vision impaired or blind, people with cognitive, developmental or learning disabilities, and they're the four major groups. There's a lot of talk about neurodiversity and what that means, and it's a very different space once again. Some really good work being done by the Premier League clubs, who are a little bit behind around inclusive design for spectators. Outside of disability type, a variable that actually identifies levels of participation better than a disability type is the level of support needed for individuals. Now, the World Health Organization talks about none, mild, moderate, profound, and severe. We generally talk about somebody being independent, low, moderate, high, or very high support needs. Basically going from an independent person with a disability that requires very little social consideration right through to somebody that requires 24 hours care, may be ventilator dependent, may not be able to communicate without assistance, etc. So those two variables and the way they interact do give you a really good understanding of how people can be affected and what their support needs are. So in coming back to your question about what are some of the enablers, barriers, I start with the work that we did with the Australian Sports Commission. And this hasn't been published as widely, but it's about the benefits that people get. And it's really interesting. So if you took people that are independent with no real support needs, then you just really think of that group as having the same motivations to engage as probably the person you're sitting next to in class that might regard themselves as a bit of a sport fanatic. But as you go through low, medium, high, and very high, you move from a health and fitness focus to a little bit more with people with low support needs that do have some impact on self-development. People with medium support needs They want that, as I said, opportunity to socialise. They want to improve the way they feel about themselves, self-esteem. They want to spend time with friendship groups, and they want to enjoy company of others. And that's very similar for people with high support needs. But when you get to people with very high support needs, it doesn't matter whether it's mobility or cognitive, they just want something interesting to do. Because their constraint levels are so high, I use the word adventure, because sport generally isn't something they do on a regular basis. It becomes sporadic, and the reason it becomes sporadic is that there aren't offerings close to them. It's not easy to get to. The coaching or facilitation has rarely had the training that's required. The family or the friendship groups are under stress because of the ongoing high levels of sport that are required. A really key one, and it's really interesting because we find this from Paralympians right through to community level, they want to feel like they belong because everywhere else in life they feel different. They want that sense of freedom, and there is a difference again if somebody's born with their disability or, as I outlined earlier, along with my own circumstance, they have a traumatic injury, and they just want to be stimulated. So when we're thinking about all the things that sport can offer, they just want to be excited about life again. And so there's a boredom, and that boredom is because when the challenge is too high, people are anxious. When the expectations and challenge are too low, they're bored. A lot of people have been with higher level disabilities bored, senseless, because their level of support may not be funded. You know, in the broader UK system, we know austerity after 2008, global financial crunch, really cut back on programs for higher level of support needs. And they were left in the community to not do too much. So while many people will be thinking about having, you know, nicer pecs or calves or whatever they want to do with their body, this other group are saying, I just want to do something that breaks the monotony. And it is that bad. And it's still that bad because both the UK and Australia have been incredibly successful at the Paralympic level, but most of them don't base that on good grassroots participation. They base it on talent identification schemes championed by Australia in the lead up to the 2000 games, so much so in Australia that the Australian Paralympic Committee dominated 85% of all funding at the Commonwealth level. Now, the caveat on that is at Commonwealth level, most local community sport doesn't occur at that level. But talent ID means that you travel around geographically, and I've always liked a bit of Monty Python. Bring out your dad! I'm not dead. And in this case, bring out cripples. They measure them up, work out the ones that are going to have most probability of success. And the other 95% that don't make it go back to a community where there aren't opportunities at that level. So that all sounds pretty bleak. And it's not as bad as it was, but it's not as good as it could be. Because we also know there's a phenomenon in sport and recreation research, and that is distance decay. The further you are from leisure and sport opportunities, the less likely you are to participate. And in the Australian context, although there's some very good surf spots, although a little bit colder around the UK, surfing's a classic example. If you're living X distance from a beach, you're less likely to surf on a daily or a weekly basis. So I will get onto the barriers now. So when we come down to this whole area of constraint, we see that there are some constraints across all people with disability, and what has previously been attributed as intrapersonal, we believe can be reclassified as interpersonal more structural. So the things like a person isn't able to communicate isn't so much intrapersonal, but it's got to do with the structural modes of communication. And yeah, a very good one around that is people who require sign language interpreters. Is it their intrinsic inability to communicate? No, of course it's not. It's people communicating them in a way that they understand. So through sign language or captioning. And for people who are blind or vision impaired, it's got to do with websites and the ability of screen readers so they can find out and plan. So when you look at those constraints, transport, economic advantage, access to equipment, where competitions are played, etc., 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 you see that the intrapersonal is actually a more complex web of structural constraints. So when you look at the ecosystem that services sport, it's a multi-level analysis. It's understanding the ecosystem that sport exists within, the social context of that particular locality, region, or nation. If you look at sport without taking into account the social context, well, you can't really understand what's required to enable and what's being constraining.
Just interested in the distinction that you made between support needs and also kind of the nature of the impairment. In terms of an organisational perspective, because that has been highlighted as one of the constraints as well in your paper, do you think organisations are aware of the need to distinguish between different support needs and different impairment types in terms of how they're offering sport participation or physical activity opportunities?
I think organisationally there is an awareness. In Australia, we use a figure, 75% of all sport is delivered by volunteers. Now, if that's the case, then it's not just disability, it's gender, it's LGB, TSIQ communities. It's people from refugee backgrounds. Australia is a migrant nation. We've got First Nations community. So it's very difficult in a club sense at a grassroots level to be able to marshal your resources and get the greatest effect. I was at a seminar just before COVID closed down, face-to-face seminars, and I went to hear about diversity, different area of employment, and all we heard about was gender. And when I asked, I came to listen to diversity, and gender's important, but there are other areas of diversity. I was told in no uncertain terms, there's only enough oxygen to deal with gender at the moment. And that was honest, but also very upsetting. Because, in this sense, it was an employment sense, that they made a very strategic decision. And I think that occurs a lot of the time. So you might have a champion in the organisation that makes a decision that they might have a personal interest, they might have first-hand experience of disability. And they're going to do a disability program. So there are limited resources, and you've got to understand that. And I'm a big believer in behaviour change, because I don't really think you can change someone's personal attitude to the way they think about disability, but you can certainly change the way they behave so that they will be more aware, more empathetic to dealing with disability in a more systematic way.
Probably last question to wrap up. You have mentioned some of the challenges. We have obviously talked about at length about some of those, but what are the main obstacles you think that need to be overcome in order to be able to reduce some constraints that are faced by people with disabilities?
Not using the term people with disabilities. What I mean by that, and I'm not getting back to social model language around disabled people or people with disabilities. I think in a learning context, you've got to understand that it's not a single group, not a homogenous group, and that somebody with a learning disability is so radically different to somebody with a spinal cord injury that you're talking a different language when it comes to the challenges that they're facing. So be specific, co-design, work with people. you've got to travel, you know, half an hour, the likelihood is you're not going to do it every day. I've got wonderful footpaths and pathways around the areas I live. Then when you extrapolate that to what's close, where I go for a roll, and one of the first things I wanted to get to was my local pub. Well, I go past the swimming centre, I go past a Buddhist temple, a Catholic church, a major conference and convention centre, a number of other restaurants, and after we got, you know, the pathways put in, all of a sudden there's, you know, prams, there's people jogging, there's other people that are older in the community. Now that the footpaths are level, they're not trip hazards, engaging in, you know, a reasonably livable community. But it doesn't happen by chance, and sometimes you've got to make people feel uncomfortable in order to move forward as a community. We're very lucky to live in a developed nation where we do have democratic processes and, you know, general people at the local level, you know, the old leisure centres sort of mentalities, where they generally want to address as many people in the population as they can. But sometimes they need a hand in understanding that complex and it's nuanced. And that each of those groups, if you address what their needs are, you know, you'll have another group that you can more than adequately deal with some training and with some resources.
So yeah, really interesting points. And I think that's a fine way to kind of end our conversation. So thank you so much, Simon. I really do appreciate some very fascinating insights and also some potential solutions as well, which is always good to have that approach to our discussion. So thank you so much. I look forward to catching up with you soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity, Christopher. And as one of my early bosses said to me, don't come to me with a problem, come to me with a solution. Thanks very much.
Excellent way to end. Thank you.
And that's it. That's the end of the show. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for another episode of the Disability Sport Info Show. Until then, goodbye. You've been listening to the Disability Sport Info Show, academic insights into disability sport.